So, there I am, sitting in a board meeting at another congregation, and someone brings up the idea of having a series of adult religious exploration sessions about money, how to support people looking at our money stories in our lives. So there's a murmur of interest around the table as people share, and then it gets to someone, and there's silence. That board member speaks up and says, "Actually, I'm not comfortable talking about money. We didn't talk about money when I was growing up. I don't know whether I can do this. I know I should, but I don't know how." I've always appreciated how open Unitarians are to talking about challenging issues. Sexuality education, including gender identity, sexual orientation, our various religious beliefs and philosophical ideas about death and our choices in dying. But a number of Unitarians among us are not comfortable talking about money. I wonder why. And yet I know in the dominant North American culture, speaking about money is something connected to negativity. Extreme wealth is considered a sign of greed. Was the money gained at through unethical means? Some people think that money is something private. What goes on in my checkbook behind closed doors is none of your business. And you're right. It is none of my business. But it's your business to figure out if how you're using your financial resources is in line with your values, if it's reflecting on things both you know consciously, which I'm sure is true for most of us in the room, as well as surfacing things that may be unconscious. And only you can figure that out. But you don't have to figure it out alone. That's why we're in community. So I thought I'd offer you some information that may be useful in your reflections. So we just sang, "Our world is one world. What touches one affects us all. The seas that wash us round about, the clouds that cover us, and all too well we know here, the rains that fall." We are one beautiful blue-green planet. So how do we as a religious community create a theological and philosophical foundation for how we think about our resources, our energy, our skills and experience, our physical resources, including our finances? So the opening words by my colleague and former co-minister at First Unitarian Congregation of Toronto, Reverend Dr. Mark Morrison Reed, really relates to this when he says that the central task of the religious community is to unveil the bonds that bind each to all. One of those bonds that bind us is energy. We are part of an interdependent web of existence on this earth. The energy and matter that came from the Big Bang created that web. They've shifted into various forms over that 4.5 billion years that our planet has existed. And some of that energy and matter is invested in each one of us. It's invested in us at this time in history. It's an awesomely beautiful thing. That binding energy, then, that comes from the Big Bang, is expressed in our life energy and each other's and all beings on this earth. We invest that energy in many ways in our lives, including the life of this religious community. As has been spoken about so eloquently with Donna, the reaching out and caring for each other through hard times and good times. Ashley and Alex exploring religious ideas and ethical issues with our children and youth, and all of us doing it together as adults. Taking action in the larger community out of compassion Seeking what's fair, Nancy mentioned a couple of those areas. Creating worship services and time for community celebrations, like Peggy and her team organized this fall with the Al-Rabai family from Syria, when more of their family were able to come here. That's the energy that's invested that each of us bring together and share in that interdependence for the well-being of all, both those within this room and those beyond. There's another area where our human energy is used, in our livelihood. Now, for those of us able to work, we take our energy, expend it to the advantage of an employer, if we're an employee, or as a self-employed person for a client, or as a homemaker in the lives of our families. In return, those people, somehow in the system, were provided with some kind of compensation that we use to exchange for things that we need to survive and flourish. Shelter, food, water, clothing, education, means of transportation, and of course, means to rejuvenate our spirits through recreation. Entertainment, vacations if we can, even if it just means getting out of the house and going for a walk in a park. Or a roll, I should say, not always a walk. Livelihood is a word from Indo-European roots, conveying the idea of a life course, something that gives us energy, liveliness, and vigor. What gives us energy to propel us along our life course? In the Buddhist way of living a moral life, there's an injunction toward right livelihood. Vietnamese and Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh wrote, "To practice right livelihood, you have to find a way to earn your living without transgressing your ideals of love and compassion. The way you support yourself can be an expression of your deepest self, or it can be a source of suffering for you and others. Our vocation can nourish our understanding and compassion or erode them. We should be awake to the consequences," he writes, "far and near, of the way we earn our living." Our world is one world. Its ways of wealth affect us all. The way we spend, the way we share, who are rich or poor, who stand or fall. When we work, we get paid for our money. When we're in community, sometimes we are not able to work and the government helps us. That's part of the commonwealth. Money becomes like a storehouse of energy that holds something of value. How did it come to be this way? So before I did some research, I thought it was the barter system that came first. And then I found out actually it was the gift economy. So think, for example, of the Pacific Northwest Coast potlatch ceremonies. Anyone listening to CBC this morning, there was a wonderful interview. So if North by Northwest, if you want to follow it up. Here are some words that I found on living the tradition, the Kwakwaka'wakw potlatch on the Northwest Coast website. They put it in words for me that I'd heard from some of the indigenous people that I know. Many people believe that a rich and powerful person is someone who has a lot. The people who speak Kwakwala, the Kwakwaka'wakw, believe that a rich and powerful person is someone that gives the most away. The more gifts given, the higher the status achieved by the potlatch host. The potlatch ceremony marks important occasion in the lives of the Kwakwaka'wakw, the naming of children, marriage, transferring of rights and privileges, and the mourning of the dead. It's a time of pride, they say, a time for showing the masks and dances owned by the chief or host giving in the potlatch. It's a time for joy. Elder Agnes Aksu Alfred says, "When one's heart is glad, he gives away gifts. Our Creator gave it to us to be our way of doing things, to be our way of rejoicing, we who are Kwakwaka'wakw. Everyone on earth is given something. The potlatch was given to us to be our way of expressing joy." Isn't that beautiful? And to think that the potlatch ceremonies were outlawed by the Canadian government from 1885 until they were made legal in 1951. And the impact continues. So I had to ask myself, if that was the gift economy for the Kwakwaka'wakw and others of the Pacific Northwest, in my heritage, for the Welsh and the English, the Norwegian and the Swedish, and eventually further back, the French, where are the stories of gift economies? Where are the alternative narratives that I can find that is about giving out of joy, out of love, out of the common wealth that is among us? It's some research I want to do, and I look forward to hearing from you what you know from your heritage, whether it be Indigenous, non-Indigenous, or multicultural. Our world is one world. The thoughts we think affect us all, the way we build our attitudes, with love or hate. We make a bridge or a wall. So how do we each apply our values in how we spend our money? The Canadian Unitarian Council had a workshop that I attended 10 years ago called Dreams and Dollars. How many people have heard about it or attended it? A few of you. And one of the things I really liked about it is that it helped communities begin as individuals and think about our money stories. How did your parents handle money? Well, or were there fights about it? Or was there silence? Did your parents have a similar approach, each of them, if you had two? Or if you had one or one caregiver, how did that dominate the money story in your household? How did they teach you about how to handle money? I remembered when my parents really, there was always the sense that we had enough, but with 11 in the household, having secondhand things, cars, clothing, was the normal. It didn't matter. There wasn't a sense of prestige if you had new clothes necessarily, or shame if you had secondhand. How times have changed. How new things seem to bring prestige. Is there an alternative narrative we can bring? Now, many of us, I don't know about you, I shop secondhand regularly. I have a 1995 Toyota Corolla. After the climate march, I really have to ask myself, how much do I actually need to be using public transit instead? Our world is one world, just like a ship that bears us all, where greed and fear make many holes, but where our hearts can hear a different call. Your hearts have heard a different call in this congregation. In these 36 years of your experience, you've continued on, as the search committee word said, the little church that could. Now, I've had a chance in the last couple of months to meet with various people. And when I ask people what they appreciate about Beacon, one of the things I kept hearing again and again in these small group gatherings was, it's the people, it's the community. People trying to live their values, people trying to make an effective change in the world, people caring for each other, having our children and youth come together with a place to be who they are and be respected for it. These are the roots, as Nancy said, that hold people to this community. I look forward in 2 weeks' time, on the third Sunday of Pledge Sunday, to share more about what I've been hearing from you about what's important about this community and where you see the wings can be free to carry us beyond these walls in the vision for this community. If I haven't had a chance to talk to you in these small groups, I hope you will speak to me after the service, call me, email me, send me a card. There are many ways of connecting. And then we'll have a chance to share our ideas for the roots that we celebrate and the wings that we want to free to soar. In this time of pledging, I just want to say a word about how important it is for us to acknowledge everyone has their own life circumstances. For some, just coming and being part of the community is what they can contribute, and that is a gift indeed. For others who may have a little extra beyond their budget, give till you feel good. For those who have a little extra margin, take what you can and put your money into this community, for it holds such future, such gifts for all ages, for those here and those we touch in the various activities that don't come on Sundays, but are part of our activities, whether it's the pub, whether it's the humanist group, the book club, lunch bunch, and Soul Matters, various groups, because they fuel us so that we can reach out and live in those ways that we wish we want to be living our principles and our values. As Mark wrote, there is a connectedness, a relationship discovered amid the particulars of our lives and the lives of others. And once it's felt, it inspires us to act for justice. Sometimes it takes a jolt of currency to boost a community to live out its vision, which for Beacon is to connect, inspire, and transform. May we find the means to invest that collective energy to create a world that is more compassionate, equitable, just, and peaceful. Amen. Might it be so.